Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. Today is our Worldview Wednesday edition of the program. So we'll be speaking with Edward Lee Pitts from World Magazine in just a couple of moments. There's a lot of things taking place, of course, related to Washington, D.C., and a number of things taking place there concerning the slowdown. I was going to say the shutdown. Some people call it the slim down, the slowdown, the pause. You know, they got all kinds of names for it. But we're going to talk with him a little bit about that. Related to that, of course, is the whole issue of Obamacare. And that's kind of a central point in that whole shutdown. Related to that as well now is some debt and budget debates taking place as well. All of that has been all woven together in the debate and the discussions that are taking place. So that's going to be our discussion for the first half of the program today. On the second half of the program, I want to follow up on something that we talked about yesterday. Yesterday on the broadcast, we were talking about the subject of what is authentic evangelism. That's what we were looking at. We were kind of asking the question along the line, is going door-to-door dead? Is it still a viable way of getting the gospel message out? Is that still a way that evangelism should be done by Christians in this country, and what are the problems associated with it, and so forth? And so I wanted to follow up. I had somebody, a couple of people actually, brought up the question about whether Reformed theology is for or against the sinner's prayer. Now, many people in our listening audience are familiar with what I mean by that. You know, sometimes it's referred to as decisional regeneration, signing a card, walking an aisle, throwing a stick in the fire. Jim talked about one here this morning about driving a stake in the ground. All of those are ways in which people show a commitment for Christ, a lot of times after a very an emotional appeal. And so followed by then the request that the person pray what's referred to as the sinner's prayer. Well, is that a legitimate way of doing evangelism, and especially from a Reformed perspective? Is that found in Reformed theology? We'll talk about that on the second half of the program today. Let's go to Edward Lee Pitts. Things are happening right now in Washington as well. And so, Edward, welcome back into the, or Lee, I'm sorry, Lee, welcome back in to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Lee, you got to bring us up to speed. Why don't I just toss it to you to give us a little bit of an update on what's taking place the last couple of days, and even what's taking place right now. We've got Fox News running here that I can look up and see the monitor. And they were just recently in some hearings that are taking place there in Washington. So why don't you bring our listeners up to speed on a couple of things that are taking place?
Yeah, well, I'm sure Congress, that's the next, you know, one of their favorite things to do is they like to have hearings. But what the latest is pretty much the same thing that's been going on the last week or so since the government shutdown began. Everybody's kind of entrenched in their position. President Obama yesterday had a press conference where he basically, the theme of the press conference was over an hour. The theme of the press conference was, I'm not budging, which is, I'm quoting him there. He said, I'm not budging when it comes to negotiating with Republicans. And then that led House Speaker John Boehner, the Republican head of the House, come out and have his own press conference saying that there will be negotiations, and that presidents throughout history have negotiated when it comes to raising the debt ceiling. And it's a good time to come together with agreements and compromise to changing our spending habits. Basically, you know, the Republicans' argument is that we can't continue to just increase the limit of our credit card without looking at some of the structural issues that cause us to have this federal spending problem. And as long as we don't make structural changes, and some of those changes will be tough and hard and maybe cause short-term pain, but in the long term, the Republicans say we need to get our spending habits under control. And as long as Obama is not willing to negotiate that, then the House Republicans aren't willing to negotiate on their side either. So I know Obama made a, said yesterday that I will come to the table as long as Republicans pass a clean bill to open up the federal government again, and a clean bill to raise the federal government's borrowing limit. And by clean, I mean nothing else is attached to it. No defunding of Obamacare, reduction in spending or anything like that. And of course, Boehner said that's basically giving up all of our leverage power. And that's kind of what Boehner said, quote, that's unconditional surrender. Mm-hmm. I guess using a line from General Ulysses S. Grant from the Civil War. But Boehner said they're not going to come to the table with agreeing to that because that's surrendering all their bargaining power.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Sowell had a really interesting article the other day. Thomas Sowell, for our listeners' sake, is a senior fellow at the Stanford University's Hoover Center. And in that article, I thought he made just a lot of sense. He says this in the very beginning of it. He says, even when it comes to something as basic as and as apparently as simple and straightforward as the question of who shut down the federal government, there are diametrically opposed answers depending on whether you talk to Democrats or Republicans. There is really nothing complicated about the facts. The Republican-controlled House of Representatives voted all the money required to keep the government activities going, except for Obamacare. This is not a matter of opinion. You can check the congressional record. As for the House of Representatives' right to grant or to withhold money, that is not a matter of opinion either. You can check the Constitution of the United States. All spending bills must originate in the House of Representatives, which means that congressmen there have a right to decide whether or not they want to spend money on a particular government activity. Whether Obamacare is good, bad, or indifferent is a matter of opinion, but it is a matter of fact that the House Representatives have a right to make spending decisions made upon their opinions. So I think it brings out a really good point here and really, shows the true nature of what is taking place. It's a fact, right, Lee, that the House controls the purse strings. They can legislate by appropriation, by either giving the money necessary to do these things that the president wants to do, or withholding the money and saving that money for something else. That's completely legitimate, right?
Yeah, that's one of the powers of the House. The Senate has powers such as confirming people that the president appoints to various cabinet positions or other oversight positions in the executive branch, and obviously confirming justice of the Supreme Court. And House, the House generates and begins a lot of, the revenue bills, the spending bills. Of course, they have to originally, efficiently pass the Senate, but they always originate in the House. The spending bills originate in the House.
Mm. And let's remind our listeners too that 83% of the government is still running just fine. In fact, they seem to be the mainstream media. And the White House and others seem to be in this coordinated effort to try to tell the American people how much pain they should be going through with their government shut down. But the only pain that people seem to be feeling right now is the arbitrary pain that is being imposed by closing down certain areas of the government that the Republicans are willing to fund. For instance, some of the monuments or the parks, or even an attempt to try to close down the ocean, as I talked about the other day, 1,100 square miles of the ocean, and these types of things. So it's really functioning, still at 83%. Do you think this is backfiring on the Obama administration?
Well, that's what Republicans are banking on. I mean, they feel like that the Democrats' refusal to negotiate, Obama's refusal to negotiate, will not play well with the majority of the American public, and they think that the more Democrats pound this message, the more the Democrats own the shutdown. Republicans feel bolstered by the fact that a recent poll, a CBS poll, I believe, showed that 75% of voters oppose a clean debt ceiling increase with no spending reforms. In other words, again, by clean, that 75% of Americans don't think we should just raise the federal government's credit card limit without putting in some spending reform measures like we did last time in 2011. That's one of the most interesting things about this, is, and that's something Boehner keeps bringing out, is that, you know, 2011, when they started, when they had a similar debate over the debt ceiling, Obama did negotiate. He came to the table with Boehner, and they hashed some things out that led to some significant, almost historic spending reductions. And I think Obama doesn't want to go back to the table this time around. Maybe I guess he doesn't want to see any more spending reductions like the last time. But, through history, I think Boehner stressed that 27 times in the last 40 years, raising the debt ceiling has affected some kind of policy change in Washington, and that includes Obama himself agreeing to that in the 2011 compromise. And so why is this time different?
I think that the political element of this, the Republicans just need to forget about that altogether. Everybody is already in their camps. Everybody who is, sees Obama as destroying the country and as putting forth this extremely liberal and socialistic agenda already believes that, and this particular debate is not going to change any of their minds. Everybody who is still for Obama after all this that he has done, they're already settled in there. And I don't know if he committed murder and he was proven to have done it, I don't think it would make any difference in their mind whatsoever. They seem to already be entrenched in what they believe, and you're not going to change any opinion. So the political element of this, to me, is by far, no concern whatsoever. I don't think it's going to make a difference one way or the other on one or two votes if somebody's going to be persuaded. But I do think that what is taking place is even the liberal elements are being a little bit more convinced of the ridiculousness of the stance by the Obama administration. And one evidence of that is John Stewart the other day had Kathleen Sebelius on his program. You know, she's been on this tour of going around and talking to a number of different talk show hosts and trying to explain what's going on in the healthcare law. And it didn't go well for her at all. It says this is according to CNN, but it says The Daily Show took a more serious turn Monday night when host John Stewart introduced his guest for the evening as being Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. Sebelius, who has been on a media blitz in the recent weeks as the health care exchanges for the Affordable Care Act opened for business on October 1st, has appeared on multiple networks to promote the new law and to attempt to temper the criticism of its rollout. As the secretary sat down to begin the segment, Stewart opened a laptop on his desk and said this, quote, "I am going to attempt to download every movie ever made, and you are going to try to sign up for Obamacare. Let's see which one happens first." That was the start of the interview. Sebelius admitted that the website rollout was, quote, "started a little rockier than we'd like," unquote. There's the understatement of the century. But said the administration is working to make improvements. It's better today than it was yesterday, and it will keep getting better tomorrow, she said. The sign-up for the website were offline for part of the weekend and efforts to fix it. The glitches have caused delays for many people who are trying to sign up for the program. So I think when you see somebody like this really going after the administration now, it says to me that the general populace, even some of the liberal elements in the general populace, are starting to just see this for being the debacle that it really is. Would you agree?
So one of the things that was really amazing to me yesterday during Obama's press conference, it was over an hour long, which is unusual for a White House press conference. A lot of people speculate that, you know, he canceled his Asia trip, so he was sitting around the White House with nothing to do, I guess, so he helped invite the reporters over. But it was an hour-long press conference. He took questions, I think questions from 11 or 12 reporters, and he talked about things like buying new cars and the video game system Xbox and moaned about how canceling his tour of Asia because it was kind of like, quote, me not showing up for my own party, end quote. But the entire time, what wasn't asked was Obamacare. No reporter asked anything to Obama they had a captured audience there with the president, and he was taking questions, and not a single one asked him about the Obamacare rollout and the glitches with it and the problems with the website and the disaster that basically Obamacare's first few days has been. And that's shocked a lot of conservative observers, lawmakers and others that here's the media sitting there at the White House with the president for over an hour. Many lawmakers themselves would relish to have an hour with the president, and none of them asked him about Obamacare in the midst of all its glitches.
You're so right. So many people need to turn to other sources to really find out what's going on. One of those sources, of course, is World Magazine. You guys do an excellent job on that. Also, I found out that in reading different news items that a lot of the real reporting on these issues is coming from overseas. We're finding that, UK news sources and those types of things are asking the tough questions where we get folks over here who don't. I watched an interview the other day, or a couple of interviews, with Charlie Rose. One that I watched in particular was his interview with Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, of course. And, man, he was asking him, he was grilling him. The tone of the interview was really tough, and Benjamin Netanyahu did an excellent job of answering those questions. And I thought, well, where is this with our own president? Where are the questions like this, rather when they sit him down, they say, so how is the dog doing in the White House? Or, do you like tacos? Or the first family, do you ever eat Mexican food? Yeah, it's like ridiculous. I'm sitting there going, is this some sort of a banana republic or something? I mean, ask him a question. I had him on the program as a senator, and I asked tougher questions than that. I imagine these guys that are professionals at this, do this for a living, that they could come up with a couple of tough questions to be able to ask them. So I think you're absolutely right, and I think you guys there at World are doing a great job on this.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. One of the things that, is frustrating for some Republicans with the government shutdown is they feel like the whole drama of the government shutdown and the headlines of that has really overshadowed the Obamacare launch and how error-filled it's been and how glitch-filled it's been. And a really systematic failures. Glitch is too kind of a word to describe what's been going on the first few days of Obamacare's website launch. And that really hasn't been covered. And a lot of reporters are running around covering the government shutdown. And maybe if the government shutdown wasn't here, they would have nothing else to cover but Obamacare. But that is one of the things that I know frustrates some of the Republican lawmakers on Capitol Hill.
I think that there's, as we've been talking about, there's a couple of pieces here. There's certainly the shutdown and the way that is being handled. That's what's really getting to people. When they start hearing about veterans being locked out of being able to go in to just stand at a memorial, you go there, you stand, you reflect for a few minutes, and you walk away. When they hear that something like this needs to be shut down and gates need to be put up in order to prevent people from getting to it, barricades, so that our veterans cannot go there and reflect that way, I think people are beginning to see that something is desperately wrong with the Obama administration, that they would go to these lengths. I think it even takes... it's taken them more money and more manpower to barricade these things rather than to leave them open. We've got cases here in North and South Carolina, right up at the border. People at this time of year like to go up to the Blue Ridge Parkway. We've got places up there that are private businesses that are open for business, but the people can't get to it because the law enforcement and that have been instructed to close the road down to stop people from getting there to these businesses. So these types of things are just going too far, and I think that even the average person is starting to say, just hold on a minute. This is too heavy-handed. Trying to make people feel the pain unnecessarily is just going way too far. So that was one thing.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, interesting to point out about that is, I mean, a lot of these things are open-air memorials. The World War II Memorial, in the heart of downtown Washington, is open air. There's no building or entrance door, exit door. And yet, like you said, it takes more resources to barricade and block and guard an open air memorial than it does to just leave it open.
Exactly.
I like what one of the veterans said last year when they kind of moved. You know, these World War II veterans flew in from I think somewhere in the Midwest on an honor flight early in the morning, and they come to see this memorial before they pass away, and it's barricaded and blocked. And when they broke down the barricades and went in anyways and saw it, one of them told a reporter that Omaha Beach was barricaded when we got there too.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of strange that we've gotten to that place of the country where our own World War II veterans have to kind of storm the barricades to go see their own memorial. And like you said, things like that have continued on. This week, an elderly Nevada couple was given 24 hours to leave their home of more than three decades by federal officials because it rested on federal land. The Obama administration shut down the Amber Alert website this weekend, and due to public furor, the government reopened it on Monday.
But left open Michelle Obama's website about, the way, get up and move or whatever that is about people exercising, by the way. But go ahead.
Yeah, and then the latest, the Amber Alert is back on now after being shut down over the weekend. And the latest outcry is over reports that the government is denying the $100,000 death benefit paid to help military families with funeral expenses and living expenses when their relatives are killed while serving in uniform. And
yes,
that includes that the families of five U.S. service members killed over the weekend in Afghanistan received notice, I think, on Monday or yesterday, saying that they would not be receiving that benefit, which would help pay for funeral expenses and help pay for family members coming to Dover, Delaware to claim the body and other things like that.
Yes.
So the list keeps growing on the way that they're using the shutdown to make Americans feel pain.
Yeah, I had a personal experience as well. My daughter was just visiting with us recently. Her husband is deployed to the Middle East, and she went back home to Fairchild Air Force Base. And when she got there, the commissary was closed. So she's got a young baby, so she shops there on the base. It's much more convenient, obviously, and it's one of the perks that associated with them serving in the military. They get paid very little, and so, to be able to get the food a little bit cheaper was certainly a real benefit. And then she'd come to find out they closed these commissaries down. So now she's got to take just a couple-month-old baby, put in the car, drive a much greater distance, get off the base, and to go, to do the shopping and come back. Why? Well, it was all because the Obama administration was trying to make people feel the pain. They eventually opened the commissary back up. I think just today it's opening, in fact. And the reason was, as they said, that they found out that it wasn't really covered under any of the areas that was actually closed. And so they had closed it for no reason whatsoever. And so people are starting to see this and going, what is wrong with this particular administration? There's been plenty of government shutdowns before, and we never heard of these things before taking place. Something is wrong with the way, the tone, and the bitter partisanship and political nature of this administration, and people are starting to see that. By the way, the Obama's golf course was still open during this time, even though the soldiers can't buy their food at the commissary. So that just goes to show you a little bit of the priorities. Let's run to the phone lines very quickly. We've got a couple more minutes with Lee on the line here, but Ken has something on his mind. Ken, what's on your mind today?
Good morning. I was listening to this, and I've been fortunate. I had one of my people that was very influential in my life lost his leg at D-Day and worked every day of his life as long as he could into his 80s.
Yes.
And the spirit that they fought when they went up on the shore at D-Day is the spirit we're fighting against now. Nothing has changed. These are the children, the offspring of the battle that we fought in World War II. It's just a different time. We battle against principalities and darkness.
Yes. I understand that the veterans are being, their cause is being taken up by the motorcycle groups again. They are heading to Washington, from what I heard just recently. And on the weekend, they're going to be there in Washington to show support for the veterans. And so upwards of 2 million bikers is what I'm hearing right now. I can't confirm
that.
We don't
need to have a bunch of the people that we should be looking up to, the greatest generation as they've been referred to.
Yes.
They don't need to be fighting our fight for us at this point in time.
No, you're absolutely.
It's time for us to stand up and take care of them.
You're absolutely right, and I think that as this go forward, I think more and more of that are going to come up. There's no doubt about it whatsoever. Okay, thank you very much, Ken. Appreciate it. Lee, did you want to respond to that at all?
Oh, well, no. I mean, my grandpa fought in World War II. He was a POW in the Philippines for 2.5 years and was thankful to survive and lived till he was 89 and passed away in 2009. And great influence on my life, both as a person and a man of faith. And so, yeah, I definitely agree with the caller that, you know, these World War II generation, we owe them our, you know, so many things that we can never repay them. And it's long past time for us to, you know, to stand up and be the ones who are doing the fighting. Regardless of what your position are, it's definitely our time to take the lead. I did want to close with one thing I thought was interesting yesterday. One of the senators, actually a senator from South Carolina, your state, Lindsey Graham, had an interesting quote about all this. He said, show me how a way this ends without Boehner and Obama talking. I don't know how this ends, but maybe we put them both in Gitmo. I thought it was kind of a funny quote, but just saying maybe the only way they get Boehner and Obama to talk is by putting them both in Gitmo and forcing them to talk.
Yeah.
Gitmo being the detention center for terrorists in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
Right. I think that, you know, the idea there is just that the idea of the Republicans not funding Obamacare is a just cause for a couple of reasons. One, it's a just cause because the American people don't want it. And that's number one. The numbers there, the way that it was done, the way that it was shoved down the American people's throat, the backhanded, backroom way that it was passed, and the American people don't want it. So I think that the Republicans standing up and saying they're not going to fund it is a just cause, and I agree with that. The second thing is, it's been demonstrated that this thing is not ready for prime time. If they can't even get the registration of the thing right, are we really going to hand these people 1/6 of the U.S. economy? Do you want them trusted with doing your next heart surgery if they can't even work out getting somebody registered on the website? I think they've proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that they're not ready for this at all. And so I think, if anything, a reasonable compromise is to delay the entire thing for a year. If they're not willing to do that, that seems like a reasonable compromise. Then I think that they're not willing to do that because it's got a lot more problems associated than they're willing to admit. I'm going to have to let you go, Lee. Thank you so much for your reporting and the work you guys are doing. As we mentioned, we're not going to be able to get this news elsewhere. So thank you so much for what you guys do there at World Magazine. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. Look forward to being on your program again in the near future.
Okay. That was Lee Pitts. You can check out all his articles out at www.worldmag.com. Got another caller up here in just a minute. Just couldn't fit him in. Carrie, can we take him before the break or should we wait till after the break? Okay, we'll take Chris now, and then since it's going to, I think, relate to the same subject, and then we'll just take our break a little bit later. Go ahead, Chris. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, hey, Kevin. I was listening to you talking about the shutdown.
Yes.
And I want to show you how this is playing out in my world anyway.
Okay.
Because the way I see it, you've got a situation where the president and the Democrats are trying to provide health insurance for the large number of people in this country who don't have any,
mm-hmm.
and you have Republicans who are trying to shut it down, who mm-hmm. don't want to do that for them,
mm-hmm.
and you have a system that's been implemented now, and it is crashing or having problems because it's so popular. So many people are trying to get on it, find out what they can find out, see if they can get some coverage, but the Republicans want to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not worried about these people who don't have insurance.
Well,
they don't care if they have to go to the emergency room.
Yeah, well, a couple of your statements are true and objectively true. Your other part is subjective, you know, where you say they don't want people to have health care. I don't think that I can't say that. I can't impugn their motives and say, you know, that they don't care that people don't have health care and, you know, they're evil people and they want people to die without having care. I don't believe that, and I have no reason to believe that. What the fact is that Congress does have the ability to fund or not fund certain programs. They have the power of the purse, and that was set up by, this is the United States, and that was part of our constitutional way that the government has been set up. So they have every right and every responsibility to fund what they feel the American people want funded and what they don't want funded. If you don't agree with that, that's just a fact, right? If you don't agree with it, then, as Obama keeps saying, elections have consequences. Well, his election had a consequence, but so does their election have a consequence. They've been elected to that office, and they have deemed that we can't afford this, that the American people don't want it, and it is not good for the American society, and they have every right to come to that conclusion. So those are, without impugning anybody's motive and what they're doing.
He won two elections.
Yep.
It passed Congress.
Right.
Was declared constitutional by the Supreme Court.
Right.
It's pretty clear that, you know, the people in this country do want it.
Well, it's also constitutional for the Congress to choose to fund something or not to fund it. Both things are constitutional. And they were also elected to Congress. So those two things are awash, right? It's all constitutional, and it's all that both the groups that are debating this have a constitutional right to do what they're doing. So I don't think that we can say, you know, that doesn't enter in whether or not this is a legitimate thing that is taking place, to then refer to them as being terrorists or say that they don't care about people's health care. They just believe that there's a better way to go about this, and that is through the private system. And that's a debate.
That's not what Glenn McConnell said. Excuse me, not Glenn McConnell, but
Mitch McConnell.
Minority Leader McConnell, Mitch McConnell.
Right.
That's not what he said. He was on Face Nation once. And he flat out just said, you know, the problems of the uninsured are not our problems.
Well, I don't know about that particular quote, but I don't think, you know, I wouldn't say that these people don't care that people don't have insurance. I think that they feel
that. Where's their plan at, then?
Well, they've offered many plans on it, and one is, well, that basic concept as to whether somebody who is working should then pay, be forced to pay, not that whether it's morally right for them to help out somebody else that doesn't have insurance, but should be forced by their government, that money should be taken away from them, and they should be made under threat of law and fine to pay for somebody else, is where we have the problem with it. The Christian.
You mean the individual mandate?
Well, I'm talking about the entire socialistic idea that one group of people should be paying for the other group of people to for their health care or for other services as well. I'm just saying that, that whole concept, we believe in the free market system and that people have to take responsibility for themselves. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't help available for them and that we shouldn't provide help for them, but there's a difference between being mandated to do it, where somebody is saying, if you don't provide help for somebody who needs it, you are then going to go to jail as a result of that under threat of, you know, the prosecution of law. There's where we have the problem with it. And so I think that I wouldn't impugn their motive in it. I'm just trying to look at the objective facts of what's taking place. Chris, I got to run. I got another topic up here this afternoon. But thank you so much. I appreciate your comments on it. And I understand.
Have a good day.
Okay. I understand that there's people that have an opposite opinion on it. And he was very gracious in his comments there. And I appreciate that. Okay, we got to take this commercial break. I was supposed to take it about 10 minutes ago. So let's get to that, and then I have a second subject that I want to talk about a little bit as well, something I mentioned yesterday in the radio program that I just want to add a little bit of clarification to it. And that was somebody said to me, hey, do you guys actually believe then in the sinner's prayer? When they met you guys, they were talking about people that hold the Reformed theology. Do you actually believe then that the sinner's prayer is a legitimate way of bringing people to salvation in Christ? We'll talk about that when we come back from the break.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.